Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday, September the 14th. Did Terry Bell just say a chance of snow and a hard freeze in northern Wisconsin tonight? It's too early for that. Well, President Bush last night said he accepted the recommendations of his top commander in Iraq, who said the troop surge is working, and ordered a gradual reduction in U.S. forces there. In an address to the nation last night, the president said he will withdraw 5,700 troops from Iraq by Christmas, with more gradual troop reductions next year.
The principle guiding my decisions on troop levels in Iraq is return on success. The more successful we are, the more American troops can return home.
However, he also indicated a long-term commitment of U.S. troops in Iraq, saying they would certainly be there after he leaves office. The president said the success of a free Iraq is critical to the security of the United States, that it will deny al-Qaeda a safe haven, and will counter what he called the destructive ambitions of Iran. Democrats say the president's plan is inadequate. And in the Democratic response to the president last night, Senator Jack Reed of Rhode Island, a former Army Ranger, said Democrats would work profoundly to change the U.S. military involvement in Iraq. He said the president did not provide a plan to successfully end the war or a convincing rationale to continue it. This hour, we wonder, what did you think? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Did the president's address last night or General David Petraeus's testimony earlier this week on the progress in Iraq change your mind at all? Or did it reinforce your beliefs? Or do you remain unconvinced? We welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest this hour, Dennis Riley, professor of political science at UW-Stevens Point. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So what did you think was the most important part of the president's speech last night?
Well, I watched, and I can't say that I heard anything that I thought was going to change anyone's mind. So I think we are exactly where we were when the surge was announced, in effect, except that the 30,000 troops are actually over there. So I nothing really struck me except the sloganeering, the phrase return on success, without, so far as I was able to tell, any indication of what success would mean.
Yeah. Well, you say that you didn't hear anything that would convince anyone. What about Republicans? Did it convince Republicans not to jump ship?
Some, I think, or at least not to jump all the way out, to maybe vote for certain low-key admonitions to the president, but not to vote for a timeline, so that his hands are not tied, as he calls it, in that way. I think, I don't know that President Bush shored up any Republican support last night. I think David Petraeus shored up some Republican support, because that ABC Washington Post poll that Cokie Roberts was talking about on NPR on Monday morning, that about 5% of the American people think George Bush will bring some sort of resolution in Iraq, and about 20% think the Congress will. But it was almost 60% who said that they thought the American commanders, especially David Petraeus, could do it. That's the perfect political cover, then, for all the Republicans who are wavering. They can stay with the White House, but not say they're staying with the White House. They're staying with the assessment on the ground from the man who wrote the book on counterinsurgency. I mean, that'll be their cover.
Yeah. Well, the Senator Jack Reed last night said the Democrats would work profoundly to change U.S. military involvement in Iraq. Can the Democrats really do anything?
Well, it doesn't, if the last six or 8 months is any guide, it appears not very much. I know that Jack Reed believes that. I know that Harry Reid believes that. I know that they're going to do everything they can. But I think that they have seen that an absolutely determined president with the support of his party, even if that party is the minority party, can do almost anything they choose to do with respect to foreign and military policy. So it's going to be extremely difficult to find something. They think they may be able to get the 60 votes for Jim Webb's proposal to require, you know, the same length at home as the previous deployment. And that would really reduce the number of troops available, given how many 15-month deployments have been. And they don't have replacement troops in many respects. So there would be a backdoor way of saying you can only have so many troops over there because you can only have so many troops that, under the law, you can send there for a deployment.
Yeah.
They think they can get 60 for that. I think Harry Reid was pretty optimistic about that. On all things considered yesterday.
Yeah. But the president was correct when he said that U.S. troops will be in Iraq well after he leaves office.
Oh, I think that's pretty much guaranteed now, because he's going to have them there unless there's some extraordinary action in the Congress. There will be 130,000 of them left next July or August. Well, that's only 6 months before he leaves office and someone else takes the job. And you couldn't, according to everything we've been hearing this past few months, you can't get 130,000 Americans out of Iraq in 6 months. So he's right. They'll be there. Excuse me. The question is the nature of the commitment we make. And I think one of the things that's going to bother an awful lot of people, and not just Democrats, is the apparent open-ended nature of it. It's not just that there's not a fixed ending date, but there doesn't appear to be any way to get a handle on when the money will stop flowing, when Americans will stop being stationed there and vulnerable.
We're talking with Dennis Riley. He's a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point, analyzing with us, for us, what the president had to say last night when he addressed the nation on the Iraq War, announcing that 5,700 troops will be coming home by Christmas, with more gradual reductions next year, perhaps bringing the overall troop level back down to about 130,000 by next July, which is close to where it was before the president ordered the troop surge last winter. Is that good enough for you? Or not? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday, September the 14th. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. After 4, it's Your Views on the News. Ben will talk with a political scientist about the big stories in the news this week. One of them, I'm sure, will be President Bush's address last night to the nation on his new plan for the Iraq War. We have open lines. What was your reaction to what you heard last night? Or what you heard the Democrats say, for that matter? 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk at WPR.org. Here's President Bush from his speech last night.
Americans want our country to be safe, and our troops to begin coming home from Iraq. Yet those of us who believe success in Iraq is essential to our security, and those who believe we should begin bringing our troops home, have been at odds. Now, because of the measure of success we're seeing in Iraq, we can begin seeing troops come home. The way forward I've described tonight makes it possible, for the first time in years, for people who have been on opposite sides of this difficult debate to come together.
We are talking with Dennis Riley, a professor of political science at UW-Stevens Point. And Professor Riley, are we going to see anybody coming together on this?
Well, it's hard for me to see that coming. The response from the Democratic leadership, not just Jack Reed last night, though he was pretty straightforward, but Harry Reid yesterday afternoon, before the speech had even been given, Certainly, Herb Kohl this morning said he was disappointed in it. I can't imagine that Russ Feingold found it particularly compelling. So, you know, I don't see very many people coming from the Democratic Party or the side that's opposed to this. I don't see, say, a Chuck Hagel even saying, "Oh yeah, the president's got me. I'm gonna go back with him right now." What happens to people like Norm Coleman and Susan Collins from Minnesota and Maine? Tough reelection fights. They've already started to inch the other way. Can they really come back around this? It's hard for me to see that as an option for them. That this doesn't. Yeah, it says we'll bring some people home, and we will. And it says we're succeeding, but I don't think a lot of those skeptics really believe that we're succeeding because they don't know what it means to succeed.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't the surge supposed to provide the military protection in order for the government to reach its benchmarks? And we heard in these recent reports that the government wasn't reaching these benchmarks. So why was the surge a success?
Well, that's a question that an awful lot of people are not going to be able to answer to their own satisfaction, to say, yeah, he convinced me that that's going to happen, because it is clear that the political side of what's going on in Iraq is, if not a failure, at least certainly not much of a success. And many people think it's really just failed, and that it doesn't stand much chance of being put together in 6 months or a year. But that was originally the sales pitch for the surge, that this would provide that level of security that would allow the government to sit down and compromise. It doesn't appear that very many people in Iraq are really looking for a compromise. And if they're not looking for it, they won't find it.
Yeah. What do you think, Professor Riley, the implication will be, the consequence will be of this Sunni leader who was murdered yesterday in the Al-Anbar province by Al-Qaeda, apparently? He was largely responsible, wasn't he, for the Sunnis turning against Al-Qaeda in that province?
Well, that's my understanding, that he was a key figure. And, of course, it could cut either way. That is, it could frighten other Sunni tribal chiefs and leaders, and they could say, "Okay, we're going to go back to being neutral," or it could anger them to the point where they seek revenge by killing even more Al Qaeda. It's really hard to say, but over the long haul, it's almost impossible to imagine a U.S. troop presence of sufficient size and strength and all the rest of that to keep Anbar province completely quiet so the sheikhs can do whatever they want. And if it does, then what is it that they want to do? Do they really want to cooperate with a, quote, national government dominated by Shiites operating out of Baghdad? Is that really a long-term strategy for them, or was this just simply a way to reassert their own control over that region, that they didn't want to leave Al-Qaeda in control of the region, they took control for themselves? Do they want to share that control with something called a national government? And I find it hard to believe that they really do.
Let's go to callers. Now, Rich in Hustisford is with us first. Hi, Rich, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for letting me talk this morning. I wanted to make a couple of comments, and the first one is I have a stepson and my cousin are both over in Iraq. My cousin's there on his third tour, and my stepson is on his first. Now, my cousin tells me he was in Anbar province on his first tour, and he said it was, you know, war zone, war zone, war zone. And he's in Anbar province. I talked to him last night, and he said it's like a day and night situation where kids are going back to school, things are going back to normal. He hasn't been in a gunfight in the last things.
You know what, Rich, we're losing you. Can you tell us what you thought about what the president said last night? Are you satisfied?
I'm satisfied with what Bush said, and I was very dissatisfied with what the Democrats said, because they said, yeah, we haven't heard anything from President Bush on how to do this. Well, I haven't heard anything from the Democrats on how they want to do this. Hmm? They have no idea on how to get out, and they haven't put anything forward. So for them to say Bush doesn't have a way to get out, well, come up with something. Come on, give us some things, and
yeah,
we won't hear anything from them.
The Democrats want to withdraw much more quickly, Rich.
Yeah, they want to get out, and they want to do nothing about what the consequences for us getting out quickly would. What would happen in the entire region if we got out? If we just left tomorrow, the whole place would go, you know. Every bit of good, all the soldiers that died already for this to get, for all the progress that has been made, will be like, we're like telling a mother, yeah, you know, you did it for nothing.
Yeah. Professor Riley?
Those kinds of things are very hard to comment on. I'm certain that his cousin's observations about Anbar are correct. Everybody knows that at the moment, mm-hmm, it's very different than it was a couple of years ago. And it will stay that way, probably, except for the occasional assassination. It'll stay that way as long as the Sunni sheikhs want it to stay that way. And if they change their minds, then it will change to some other situation, because they're really more in charge than we are. Because if they were to give up on us and say they're going back with al-Qaeda, then it would become a completely different place again. However, have the Democrats offered something? I don't think the Democrats have a clear-cut idea that the whole party goes along with, except the idea of saying, we're coming out, on this timetable, and if you in Iraq need help, you better ask for it now while we're still there, and you better tell us what it is we're going to do. We'll continue to train you, we'll continue to protect American diplomats, we'll continue to seek out al-Qaeda, and we'll do no more than that. Now, and we'll get out as fast as we can. Well, I wouldn't say as fast as we can. We'll get out over the next 18 months. Okay. I don't know. Is that not a plan? Perhaps not. Certainly not in Rich's eyes, it's not a plan.
Right. Rich thinks that the Democrats don't care about the bloodshed and chaos that will ensue if we do pull out quickly. That's what he thinks will happen, and he doesn't think the Democrats care.
Right. Well, I'm always a little bit reluctant to say that people don't care that chaos will follow their decisions. I think they do. I think what a lot of the Democrats feel is that chaos will follow regardless of what we do, that we're not going to be able to put ourselves between the current situation in Iraq and ultimately a whole newly defined region that we don't have a lot of control over. I think a lot of Democrats feel we just simply can't do that.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Rich, for the call. Jan in Duluth is with us now. Hi, Jan.
Good morning. First of all, to Rich, it's not up to the Democrats to come up with a plan. George Bush is the president. He got us in this. He should get us out, but he won't. But that's not why he called. I called because of the speech. And I think that by linking some military coming home around Christmas, around 5,000 of them, he will convince some people that he's actually doing a drawdown. And even though anybody who listens knows that even with the full drawdown to next summer, we will still be at more than we were before the surge. But that'll be just enough of a little crumb to get him some more good feelings or something. And it just disgusts me.
Yeah, Jan.
He's always lied to us, so why would he not lie now?
Well, thanks for the call, Jan. Only 30 seconds before a news break, Professor Riley, is it enough of a crumb that some in the American public might be hopeful that troops are coming home?
Oh, I think it'll be, make some very nice pictures on television, local stations, and national networks will show people coming home, and that's great. And it will have probably a shelf life of a week.
Yeah. Our guest is Dennis Riley, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point, talking with us about last night's address to the nation by President Bush on his new plans for Iraq. This is the Ideas Network.
Tonight, a nation eager for change in Iraq heard the president speak about his plans for the future. But once again, the president failed to provide either a plan to successfully end the war or a convincing rationale to continue it.
That was Senator Jack Reed of Rhode Island delivering the Democratic response to President Bush's address to the nation last night. The president says he plans to bring home 5,700 troops by Christmas with more gradual reductions in the coming year. Democrats say that's not enough. Do you think it is? What was your reaction to the president's plan last night? What are your thoughts this morning on the war in Iraq? Are you satisfied with the progress being made in Iraq? And do you agree with the president that troops can come home only as more success is found there? 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Looking for your questions about your reactions to President Bush's address to the nation last night. As we talk with Dennis Riley, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. And our next caller is Warner in Duluth. Hi, Warner. You're on the air.
Yeah, this is for Dennis Riley. Number one, I think that, I believe that the surge is the same thing as escalation. It's a choice of words. Number two, we should have a 10% reduction of war funds each month we are there. A good rear guard action is to cover our going out of Iraq. Westmoreland is the same as Petraeus. They both see the light at the end of the tunnel. And number three, let the Iraqis create their own government. I thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you make of that, Professor Riley?
Well, you know, semantically, surge, escalation, they're all ways of saying we're going to put more troops in and do more of whatever those troops are supposed to do. So you can't quarrel with that. Reducing funds is, in the end, Congress's primary mechanism for slowing down a war. They haven't been willing or able to do it. I don't believe they would have the votes to do it now. It would take 60 votes in the U.S. Senate, and I don't think they can get them. So, you know, that clearly that's what Congress has in the Constitution as its number one weapon, but I think that's a weapon that stays unused in virtually any such situation. I don't know if David Petraeus is exactly William Westmoreland, but the comparisons are inevitable. The commanding general in a war which the country has tired of. Although Westmoreland was out really before the entire country turned against the war, or much of the country turned against the war.
Yeah. I wonder if you want to, let's talk just a little bit, that reminds me of the controversy over MoveOn.org's full-page ad that they bought earlier in the week, saying that General Petraeus was really General Betrayus and that he was lying about the progress in Iraq and the explosion that ensued after that, with Republicans mainly asking Democrats, especially Democrats like Hillary Clinton running for president, to denounce MoveOn.org, which apparently she has not yet.
No, and I suspect no Democratic presidential candidate wants to go into that briar patch, so they'll probably stay out of it. But it was, in some respects, unfortunate. I mean, I don't know that one can really accuse the general of lying. I think you can accuse him of seeing a different reality in some sense, but that's about as far as you can go. I mean, if you listened to any of his Senate testimony and the responses, you could really tell that people just simply see this through a filter that's been constructed by the 4 years of observing it. And it's just extremely difficult for them to break out of that, and maybe there's no reason to break out of it. Russ Feingold and John McCain went to the same hearing, but you would never know it by listening to their responses and the questions that they had for the general and the comments that they had. I have a hard time saying that he was lying. I also have a hard time saying that he was seeing the full picture and presenting the full picture the way I see it. But then, you know, who's to say which one of us is right? I have to go with what I think based on all the things that I've heard from so many sources.
Mm-hmm. Carrie in Augusta. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to just comment that a couple of things. One, I just feel so sad and so frustrated that the president has now placed the fact that the troops can leave if they succeed. That's just, that feels immoral to me, and just makes me so sad that that would be the case, that it's not the plan and the failed plan, perhaps, that will bring the troops home, but the fact that they have to succeed, and they are. They're doing what they are given, and the equipment that they're given and everything. That just makes me so sad.
Yeah. Well, maybe makes a lot of people sad, Professor.
Oh, I don't think there's any question that it makes a lot of people sad. And I think the, you know, the vast majority of Americans are literally frustrated for different kinds of reasons, some because we can't get them out, some because we aren't going to do those things that they believe would be necessary for, quote, success. But you've got an awful lot of troops over there that aren't exactly sure what it means to succeed. And when military people don't know what it means to succeed, then to succeed is to stay alive till you're rotated home. There doesn't seem to be, in their minds, a really clear-cut mission, I think, in much of the country. And when the casualties are so randomly produced, I mean, very few are killed or injured severely in firefights. It's occasional. But most are simply blown up by a roadside bomb that they were unlucky enough to hit. And that's got to be frustrating and tension-creating and all the rest of that. They're sad. They're frustrated. They're trying to do the mission as they understand it and just continuing to do that. But they're not exactly sure what it means to succeed. We always bring troops home when they succeed. It's just that we usually try to give them a somewhat clearer definition of success than I believe we have for them now, and that many people believe we have for them now.
Do we know, Professor Riley, if public opinion is changing at all over the last, week or so, in terms of how desperately we want troops to get out of Iraq, or is it shoring up a little bit with Petraeus's testimony?
My reading of what I've seen so far is that it really has made only the slightest change. That is, it provided the political cover for the wavering Republicans to stick it out for a little bit longer, but not all of the wavering Republicans. So now the scramble goes for, well, what can we get people to vote on? While at least among a substantial portion of the population, the frustration is turning to anger over the inability of the Democratic Congress to do the things that everybody thought they were going to do in 2006. When that election ended in 2006, if you had asked me, and if I'd been on in late November and somebody had said, are things going to change, I would have said yes. And what are we going to have in July of 2008? Basically what we had in July of 2006. That, to me, is astounding, and I think it has a lot of people very, very frustrated because they don't see that as a way of accomplishing anything.
Yeah. Well, let's ask listeners, are you frustrated, or are you convinced that we're on the right path in Iraq following the testimony this week of General David Petraeus and President Bush's address to the nation last night? He announced, the president, that 5,700 troops will be coming home by Christmas, and there will be more gradual troop reductions in the coming year, so the overall troop level could be back down to about 130,000 by next July, which is close to where it was before the president ordered the troop surge. The president also said last night that the U.S. will be in Iraq well after he leaves office. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Democrats are saying that President Bush's planned troop reduction isn't enough, and Democrats are promising to try to change the U.S. military involvement in Iraq. Talking with our guests over how successful they might be at that, Dennis Riley, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
General Petraeus believes we have now reached the point where we can maintain our security gains with fewer American forces. He has recommended that we not replace about 2,200 Marines scheduled to leave Anbar province later this month. In addition, he says it will soon be possible to bring home an Army combat brigade for a total force reduction of 5,700 troops by Christmas.
President Bush last night addressing the nation on Iraq, saying the more successful we are, the more American troops can return home. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our guest helping us analyze what the president had to say last night, Dennis Riley, professor of political science at UW-Stevens Point, and David in Madison is our next caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I think George Bush is completely delusional. Last night he talked about how both sides can unite behind his policy and how we're supposed to be all excited about a few troop reductions, and yet we're going to leave more than 100,000 troops there, and we're going to have an enduring legacy into the next presidency. I don't know how he expects anybody to still believe a word that this guy says. I mean, you know, it's just more of the same. He told us in January that the purpose of the surge was to create breathing space for political reconciliation. Now that totally hasn't happened. He didn't say a word about that last night. It's time for George Bush to admit that his policy has failed, and whether we pull out now or 5 years from now, it isn't going to make one bit of difference. It's going to be a disaster no matter what, and it's time that we just stop pretending that there's going to be a happy ending in Iraq. And I'd like to remind the listeners that next Friday, September 21st, is Iraq Moratorium Day, and they should come down to the Capitol steps at noon for a Troops Home Now rally. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, are we going to see more of this, do you think, Professor Riley?
Oh, I think so, yeah. I think that one thing certainly that David made a good point about, there's nothing there that can bring Russ Feingold together with John McCain. They can do campaign finance reform together, but they can't get on the same wagon about this. And even in between them, Mitch McConnell yesterday, on All Things Considered, when he was responding to Harry Reid, said what it appears is the Democrats are just in a really big hurry to surrender. Surrender is a tough word to use if you're planning to get people to come with you to go somewhere that you want to surrender and we want to win. That kind of rhetoric doesn't do much good. But also, the other thing I think David was on to very, very well, it's George Bush's policy, and George Bush is pretty far down in public estimation. And so part of the inability of this policy to bring people together is that he's now the face of it again. While he had David Petraeus as the face of it, he had some people moving a little bit. We'll have to see how it plays out over the next couple of weeks, but I suspect it'll start to slip back to exactly the same old dividing lines with a handful of Republican senators just stuck in the middle and trying to figure out, well, they may have to just find out which side to go to. It may be that rough on them.
Talk some about how you think this will play with the race for president in 2008. Last night, well, actually, I saw the repeats early this morning of people being interviewed for their reaction to the president's address, and it was all the presidential candidates. There were some current sitting members of Congress, including Hillary Clinton, but it was like the presidential campaign on parade.
Exactly, and I'm sure that there isn't a candidate, other than maybe John McCain, who really wants that to be a central focus a year from now, because there is going to be some kind of a mess when we leave. I mean, it may not be as bad as the president has predicted it'll be. It may play out very different, but there'll be a mess. It's not going to be a pretty sight as we're on our way out. Just as Vietnam wasn't a pretty sight immediately on our way out, it looks kind of almost a vacation destination now, but it didn't then. So I'm just a kind of a pessimist about it, I guess, because as a presidential candidate, boy, would I not want to be there next July saying, well, here's how I'm going to do it, because the other side will just start shooting at how you're going to do it. Rich, our first caller, was very sincere and very committed to the idea that we had to continue doing certain kinds of things. He's not going to vote for a Democratic candidate that says we got to get out on the, say, the Barack Obama plan announced a couple of days ago, a brigade a month or two brigades a month until we're all out of there. So those candidates are now going to be stuck with the idea of, one, how do we get out? And for the Democratic candidate, it must be how we get out expeditiously without being labeled, anti-national security by the other side. And for the Republican candidate, it's still going to be, well, if I'm going to argue that there's going to be a long-term presence that goes on until 2012 when I have to run again, what is that presence going to look like?
Mm-hmm.
How am I going to make that palatable? George Bush hasn't been able to make it palatable. How am I going to be able to make it palatable? It's just, I'm sure all the presidential candidates were upset. But it's also partly that's where our national attention always focuses on who's going to be president. And it's clear that the next president's going to have to take a broom to some of this.
Yeah. Dawn in Onalaska is with us now. Hi, Dawn.
Good morning. I'll just preempt this with the fact that I am in the military, and I am in no more position to make a reference that the military is frustrated than the professor is who is not in the service. But when they say that the military is getting frustrated, I don't think necessarily that they are. What would be more frustrating right now would be to negate all the gains we've made by pulling more troops than that's already, in the model to come out and say, well, okay, we're going to start pulling these troops back. Now, what are you going to do to the morale for all these soldiers that have spent, months and years trying to gain areas that are safer now? I mean, it's not just everyone thinks it's about the oil, but it's also about the schools that we're helping out, the children, the homes, the infrastructure that we're working on. So, for people to be concentrating on the number of troops we have and when to get them back, I think that's a little nearsighted.
And you, Dawn, are supportive of what the president plans to do?
Yes, I am. Well, he's the commander-in-chief, so that has to be my position.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not out of ignorance. There's so much more than what the media gets. And, one of the biggest frustrations we have in the military is you never hear the stories that of the schools that are opening, the positives. You hear the body counts and what's failing and all that stuff, but I think a lot of it is, if it was a better picture, a more true picture of what's going on over there, maybe public policy would be a little open to gains, too.
Well, Professor Riley, a quick pullout could negate all the progress made so far.
Well, I suppose it could. Again, I don't know for sure that it would, but I suspect that it could. On the other hand, there's a legitimate difference of opinion over what gains, how many gains, and what has been the cost of those gains. I don't think anyone wishes to be critical of the military and its activities and actions in Iraq necessarily. I don't think it's, there is some frustration there. Why did seven military people write to the New York Times expressing their frustration?
Mm-hmm.
Why? I read an opinion piece by a Marine corporal who said the saddest thing that he can think of is that what he wants his son eventually to think is that he was involved in a disaster. That's really sad to think that someone might think that. Now, I'm sure the military, like the population in general, takes very different views of what's happening and what ought to be done next. But the military has to again accept this notion of a commander in chief and a mission. And even the guys that wrote into the New York Times said, "But we're good soldiers and we will do what we need to do." Two of them died the other day when a truck rolled over.
Thank you, Don. Rob in Eau Claire, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've just got a couple of comments, specifically related to the president's speech last night. I think fundamentally, I think I agree with what he said. I mean, he is trying to, in a sense, appease, really, those that have put pressure on him, and I think rightly so, to come up with some type of solution for the whole military buildup. So in a political footing, I think he's trying to obviously appease that, and at the same time, he's obviously trying to fulfill his commitment to the Iraqi government. And I think, I guess, what I would add to the discussion here is that, you know, move back in history a little bit. I mean, our past relationship with Iran, supporting the Shah, and the perception that when things get difficult, you know, America pulls out. And the damage that did to us and just our credibility in foreign policy.
Rob, thank you very much. We only have a minute to go. Maybe talk a little bit about that and the president saying that we need success in Iraq in order, you know, to – it's critical to the security of the United States.
Sure. And something that you can call success in Iraq probably is important to our national security. But the question is, what do we mean by success? Is this policy going to achieve that success or any other kind of success? What is actually going to be the impact on the ground of saying we're going to be there for a really long time? Is that going to make the Iraqi government stronger or is it going to make the Iraqi government weaker? You can take either position. And so, I mean, I take one, but mm-hmm. I think both are valid. There are arguments on both sides. We don't know. No one, I think, in 2002, when the use of force authorization was voted on, I don't think anybody in the whole country thought this is what we were buying.
Yeah, we'll have to take up this debate another time.
Okay.
Dennis Riley, thanks a lot for being with us.
All right, thank you, Joy.
Dennis Riley, professor of political science at UW-Stevens Point. Thanks to Karen Prager and Cheryl Gasser for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.